This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
For the latest in movie news and box office reports, welcome to the Cinema Recap Podcast. And now for your hosts, your friends and mine, John Bonham and Mark Jadson.
All right, and welcome to your semi-weekly edition of Cinema Recap. Got your hosts, John Bonham, as always, with Mark Jackson. And it's been a while, but we've got a special guest back as the Vern joins us.
Hey, what's up, gentlemen? It's good to be here. A lot of busy things. One big news I have to announce, I have... technically my house. I can't really move in until the 15th of July. That's where I send all the paperwork. But I have my house.
Congratulations.
That's awesome, man. Congrats.
Very excited to have my own house.
Was it a big move for you?
Actually, no, because I move so often. I have basically just not that much stuff. All I got is basically my couch, aka futon bed, my TV, my Blu-ray, Laserdisc, VHS player, my movies, my clothes, some books, and that's really it. And my drum set. So it won't take that long to move.
Okay, low maintenance. Sounds like a nice, easy move for you, man.
Yeah.
There we go, man.
So you're doing like a big, nice, like movie room setup at the new place?
No, I'm doing like, you know, I'm going to put my Blu-ray and Laserdisc player, my, you know, widescreen TV in the main living room. And then downstairs, I have an old tube TV, so I'm going to put that down there in the basement. I'm going to hook up a VCR and one of those all-in-one Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo systems downstairs and play like old-school video games and watch VHS movies in there.
Sounds like a solid man cave setup going on.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I have my drum sets and other bands are come over and play music, and we're just going to hang out and have a few beers. One of my friends said that he'll sell me like a foosball table to use in there, so.
Oh, hell yeah, man.
All right.
Yeah.
Love it. Well, good. Excuse me. Good for you.
Thank you,
Mark, any significant changes for you recently?
Significant changes. Honestly, it's been a pretty smooth week. I think I mentioned the last time we were on that, you know, helped my folks move from Dayton, Ohio to Columbus, so they're really just getting settled now. It's definitely nice to have them in my backyard. Not literally in my backyard, but like, you know, 6-7 miles away. So that's nice. But yeah, nothing massive on my end, really.
Yo, it's Mark, you mentioned that because my sister is my next door neighbor. Like, literally, she's like a house away from me. Like, we're next door neighbors. I could walk into her yard right away.
See, I don't know if I'm ready for that yet, you know.
I hope you guys like each other, Vern.
Exactly. I like the distance we're at right now. It's perfect. We don't have to get on the freeway or highway anymore or anything to see each other. You know, they're like 6 miles away from me, 6-8 miles away from my sister. So it's pretty nice right now.
Nice. John, anything with you?
Well, you know what? I think, so Vern, I moved to North Carolina a few weeks back.
Yep, I heard about that. It was a big deal for you.
Yeah, a little cross-country excursion. And we just really put the finishing touches on our apartment over the weekend. Got some stuff hung up. Got our, the one area of the house that's like all my stuff is the guest bathroom. That's like all that I got. But I've got like a couple movie posters up in there. I've got a Jaws shower curtain. So it looks pretty sweet.
Oh, that's badass.
So the guest bathroom, that's my domain.
I love it.
So yeah, good stuff, guys. Well, with that, we'll go ahead and dive into some real news then.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone.
And I think we'll start off with some trailer talk. There's a few, you know, kind of big, kind of interesting ones that were released recently. One that I had almost forgotten a little bit about. You know, I had read some some plot details about this movie maybe a couple weeks ago, but then the trailer kind of caught me off guard again, was Dr. Sleep, which is the sequel to The Shining that's going to star Ewan McGregor. Guys, what were your thoughts on this one?
You want to go ahead there, Marker?
I'll pass it off to you first.
Okay, good. All right, so I actually have not read the book Dr. Sleep. I've read The Shining. I've seen Stanley Kubrick's The Shining. I like the fact that Mike Flanagan is directing this, but he's co-writing it with Stephen King, and that could be kind of hit or miss, because when you watch this trailer, it shows, you know, recut scenes or like re-filmed scenes of the movie The Shining, and I know a lot of cats out there are going to think that this is a sequel to the movie The Shining. No, this is a sequel to the book of The Shining, and both the book and the movie are very different from each other, and I'm a little, that's just one little thing that worries me slightly, is on the marketing, and I get it because most people are familiar with Stanley Kubrick's movie. Actually, in reality, this reminds me of like a sequel to the 97 miniseries that has Steven Weber and Rebecca De Mornay. I don't know if any of you saw that miniseries that came on ABC, and like I think it was 97.
I have not seen that.
No,
okay.
Not.
And so that's what this movie, Dr. Sleep, kind of reminds me of. It reminds me of a sequel to that miniseries, especially in certain scenes, the way it's shot. I don't know, but hey, Mike Flanagan, he directed, I want to say Gerald's Game, and I think that 1922 that was on Netflix, that was also a Stephen King adaptation. So the guy knows how to direct horror films. He did The Haunting of Hill House.
That's right. That was really good.
And Hush on Netflix. So I know the guy can direct horror films, so I've got I'm going to see this because I like Mike Flanagan's features of what he's done before, but I know the marketing of this movie is going to harken back to Stanley Kubrick's The Shining, and that's not what Dr. Sleep is a sequel to. It's a sequel to the book The Shining, and I'm hoping people realize that. I know a lot of people out there will, but there's going to be probably some out there that are going to be like, well, wait, this is nothing like the movie. I'm like, I know it's supposed to be a sequel to the book, and that's, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like they're definitely going to mislead people a little bit, especially with parts like at the end of the trailer where Ewan McGregor is putting his face in the door frame where that was, like, you know, famously shot by the axe. So I think that's definitely going to throw some people off guard. I completely missed that. And when I watched the trailer, I noticed that the supernatural aspect was, you know, so much greater looking in Dr. Sleep than it had been in The Shining, I would say. So that makes more sense now that it's actually not a direct sequel.
Yeah.
Mark,
any thoughts?
Not really. I think you guys hit on a lot of it. I will say that I didn't know that this was not a direct sequel actually to the movie. So you learn something new every single day for sure. I guess I liked the trailer. I remember kind of being on Twitter. It was trending for a little while. I don't know if it's something like I'm in love with. This is not for me to check it out for sure. But I just don't know if it's anything that, you know, it's immediately like on my top five for the fall or something like that.
Yeah, the look of it almost had a dark like a Dark Tower vibe to it, which, you know, based on how that movie did, might not be a good thing. But yeah, regardless, it certainly, you know, grabbed my attention and garnered some interest.
Yeah,
I laugh when people are trying to say that this movie, Dr. Sleep, is going to create a Shining cinematic universe. Like, it's just a sequel, all right? They're not going to talk about spinning off characters or making other stories about, you know, maybe the Grady character or Wendy Torrance. She's not going to have her own spinoff movie, so just calm down.
Yeah, I think we've done enough spinoffs and universes for a while.
Yes.
Well, this next one, Vern, is one that I don't think Mark or I are really familiar with. So do you want to run with the kind of overview of In Fabric?
Okay. I was scrolling through YouTube one time, and there was a new trailer from the studio A24, and it's called In Fabric. Know nothing about this, but it's a British movie stars people I have not heard about before. Gwendolyn Christie, Marianne Jean Baptiste. Director is Peter Strickland. And it's about a woman who buys a dress and she takes it home and it starts giving her these weird rashes and it messes up the washing machine when she puts it in there. Essentially, it's a movie about a killer dress. Yes. A dress that will wander out and kill people when it's being hung up. Do you remember the movie Rubber about the killer tire?
No.
I haven't heard
of that one.
Oh, gosh. Rubber is great. Rubber is actually a movie about a tire, an actual tire from a car that rolls around. The tire has kinetic powers that can make things explode.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just completely off the wall, bizarre, and I really into this. The trailer has a lot of style. It just looks crazy, insane, and people that have seen the movie, because that's not come to the U.S. yet, but people in London and the U.K. have said that the movie has a lot of very funny dry humor to this one. So I like movies that are kind of strange and off the wall, and this one just kind of speaks to me because it's a movie about a killer dress, and I'm like, all right, I will check that out. The director, Pierce Strickland, he's done films like The Duke of Burgundy and Barbarian Sound Studio, which I think Barbarians, yeah, they've been like highly regarded movies from the past, but I don't know if I'll check out his other movies, but I will probably see this one for sure, and if I like this one, I'll go back and check out his other features, and sometimes that's all you need for me to see a movie. It's just a really bizarre concept, a dress that kills people. All right. I don't know what this is going to be. This may be total shit, but you sold me on that.
You're sold.
Well, Vern, I think we'll be relying on you for the review for that one, man.
Yeah.
Of course. I wouldn't win it any other way. No.
Well, I'll be curious to know what your thoughts are for sure.
All right.
And the last trailer we got is the Ad Astra trailer, which is a... I don't think the trailer gives away too much. It's a space flick starring Brad Pitt and Tommy Lee Jones. And my initial impression was it kind of felt like a poor man's Interstellar almost. I got a pretty similar vibe. I think he's like, you know, Brad Pitt has to venture off into space to find the key to saving humanity, which is long lost father, Tommy Lee Jones, who's, you know, also lost in space, is, you know, possibly found. That's what I gathered from it. Honestly, I knew a little bit about the film. I knew who was in it, so I was pretty interested to see the first trailer, and it didn't really do too much for me. Mark, what were you thinking on this one?
I think I liked it a little better than you. I've seen the trailer twice now over the last two movies that I've been to the theater to watch. So I will say, you know, I feel like we've been getting a glut of space movies over the last couple of years. I think it probably started with Gravity, and then, you know, I don't want to say it peaked with Interstellar or anything, but we had 2013 to 2015, we got three space movies back-to-back-to-back, all around the same period, like September, October, November. So I think after around The Martian, I got kind of, you know, drained with them. I remember checking out First Man last year, and I know we talked about it on the pod. You know, I was kind of overall on it. I don't know. For this movie, I've kind of got some excitement for it. I think maybe just because it's original. I know some of the other movies were too, but I don't really have a complete vibe on what the story exactly will be. What draws me in a little bit. That first scene where, you know, he's tumbling down like that lift, and, you know, then we go to, well, you've got to do this to potentially save humanity. I don't know. It's kind of hard for me to verbalize my thoughts, but I actually do have some interest for this movie.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Vern, what are you thinking?
You know, when I saw trailers with that, yes, I got an Interstellar vibe. Also got a little bit of a Contact vibe about the missing father and son trying to search for him and whatnot. I mean, it's James Gray, and I've not seen any one of his features. His last movie, The Lost City of Z, got a lot of big praise that I have not checked out. I actually bought one of his movies not too long ago, Two Lovers, with Joaquin Phoenix and Gwyneth Paltrow that I still need to check out. So, who knows? This could be good. The only space movie I missed out on seeing was that High Life with Robert Pattinson and Juliette Binoche. That was playing in the theaters for about like a week, and that was gone. That was only a space movie I saw that looked really intriguing. This could be intriguing. I need to see more of it, though, but not too much. I like the fact that they do keep it very vague, and that's all I really know about. Is Brad Pitt's father, who I think is played by...
Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee Jones, thank you. I was going to say Mr. K from Men in Black. He goes missing, and Brad Pitt's dad will find his dad. It would be great, though, if it actually does turn out that Tommy Lee Jones is actually working with Will Smith at the end of the movie, and Ad Astra just turns out to be a prequel to Men in Black, the first one.
Oh, man. I didn't know it was going to go there, but interesting.
Well, that's a twist I'm on board for.
I know, right?
But I guess to your point, Vern, the fact they don't give away too much in the trailer, that's actually a good thing.
Yeah.
So I think I'll just have to be patient and wait to see a little bit more. And Mark, I can't believe you've seen the trailer twice already, but I guess you're kind of pigeonholed when you see it in the theater.
Yeah, I'm one of those guys who, again, I don't go on my way necessarily to watch trailers a lot. But when I'm going to the theater and it's not a screening, like, I like to get there right around when the previews start. I mean, I don't really like seeing people sometimes pop in right when the opening credits of a movie do really start to get going. So I'd rather be there like 10, 15 minutes ahead of time. That's just me. I might espouse a lot of times on how I hate trailers, but, you know, I still do like the actual movie-going experience, getting there and kind of sitting down and relaxing for a bit. So I still, you know, catch my fair share here or there. I just don't go necessarily out of my way to see stuff.
Yeah, and I guess you probably benefited from getting to see the trailer in the theater, which a movie like Ad Astra, I think it's probably safe to say, is going to be, you know, one of those movies where to get the full experience, you're going to want to see it in the theater.
Sure, absolutely.
All right, well, try to burn through just a few more pieces of news here so we can...
One more trailer, and I'll mention this really quickly. So, the Banana Splits. Have you cats heard of the Banana Splits before?
The dessert? Sure.
The Banana Splits was like a variety show from the 70s where a bunch of... people wearing animal costumes show like cartoons to kids. Well, apparently they're taking this Hanna-Barbera show and making it into a horror film. Yeah, that's all. I just saw a trailer for this. It looks bad, but maybe a fun type of bad. And I did it because of the whole Child's Play thing that's coming out. But yeah, that's all I can say is this kid gets tickets to go see the Banana Splits live. The Banana Splits actually turn out to be killer robots that want to kill the audience. That's all I know for
it.
Yeah.
You know, I know it. So is there like a trailer for it?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I obviously have not seen the trailer or anything, but for some reason, I just see like the poster and I immediately start thinking about Death to Smoochie. I'm guessing you've probably seen that before.
Yeah.
Robin Williams?
Yeah, Robin Williams, yep, rest in peace. Directed by Danny DeVito. I didn't know that. I watched it when I was like 12 or 13, and, you know, I probably thought it was like another movie, but it was something different, very dark. I'll have to watch it again, probably, to be honest, just because now I'm older, and maybe more stuff will click. But, yeah, I might have to check it out someday, maybe do like a post for the website.
Yeah, there you go. We'll throw back.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that's what I thought of when I saw the little poster for that Banana Split on IMDb. I just thought of Death to Smoochie for some reason.
Nice. No, it could be a good double feature, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, there you go. Well, staying in the horror genre, something that I just found out the other day, I'm not sure if this was just released, but that they're doing a Black Christmas remake that's going to be getting released this December. I was kind of surprised when I heard that because, I mean, that's not that far away.
No, I must think be they Imogen got everything Pooch is starring filmed. In it. Yeah.
Yeah, did you guys hear anything about this?
Yeah, someone posted on Twitter about, you know, a new Black Christmas 2019. The other remake came out in 2006, and then the original was back in 1974. The original Black Christmas was done by Bob Clark, who then went on to make a Christmas Story and Porky's. And then the 2006, which I have not seen. It was not good. Yeah, they're going to do it again in 2019 with Imogen Poots. And that's the only name I recognize, Imogen Poots. And a whole other Allison Gray, Brittany O'Grady. And which kind of surprised me the most is that when they remade Black Christmas in 2006, it didn't do so good.
Yeah.
And so I'm really kind of confused why they decided to take another shot at it again. I mean, maybe did it make his money back on home video? Maybe, I'm not sure. It just seems to be kind of a weird thing to remake again. I mean, the only like holiday themed horror film that I wish they would remake is April Fool's Day. And I guess they did that once before, but it was kind of a bad Yeah, I'm just surprised, and honestly don't really care if they're remaking this, because I'm probably not going to watch this. I'm going to try and find the original movie from Bob Clark back in 1974 that had Margot Kidder in there and Olivia Hussey. So yeah, Keir Dullea from 2001, Space Odyssey, he's in that. Andrea Martin, John Statson from A Nightmare on Elm Street is in the 74 version. Yeah, it's got like a good list of cats. Not Rappaport. But yeah, I'm just more and more just want to go check out the original Black Christmas, which is essentially supposed to be the first horror film made because it came out before Halloween.
Like a first slasher horror movie?
First slasher horror movie was Black Christmas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I guess I can see that. I haven't seen either ones, 1974 or 2006. I guess I've only kind of heard, I don't want to say that like they are super controversial, but everything I kind of read about them seemed like they're kind of misogynistic, because it's just, I think it's a man who like kills females on their break or something, and I don't really know. Maybe I'm getting a detail wrong or something, but I just remember there being like a little bit of an uproar, maybe around 2006. Like, you know, it was basically just, you know, a man killing, you know, females, and it was very, very, you know, graphic, and it seemed like whoever made this movie had an agenda against female or something. I do see that this 2019 remake is directed by a female, so I wonder if, you know, what I'm saying is true, if maybe they're going to go a different route, and the synopsis I read is like, you know, these women aren't, you know, sitting easy marks, like they're going to fight back. So, I mean, I have to think that there's going to be some changes to whatever came out in 1974, 2006, just to maybe fit the political climate. But I don't know. I could be wrong. I just kind of read it between the lines.
Yeah, no, Mark, I mean, the 2006 version was directed by Glenn Morgan.
Okay.
And his only other directing credits I knew about was, like, Willard, and he directed episodes of The X-Files. He also did write a whole bunch of other flicks to, like, Final Destination movies. He's done that. And so, based on, and I don't know how misogynistic it is, I think the first one, I'm pretty sure there's supposed to be a lot of strong female characters. But it's the same type of premise as Halloween, you know, a guy with a mask stalks a bunch of female babysitters, that type of thing. So who knows? You do have a good point there, maybe with a different female director. Maybe she can add new things to it, like maybe put things in a more, maybe it'll be a female horror movie that passes the Bechdel test.
Yeah. So. Right. Right.
So yeah. So I wouldn't say maybe it's wrong for me to say I should completely diss in the movie, but come on now, the third remake of a movie already, I just like, if it was called something else, if it had a different title to it or something different about it, I might check it out. But being the fact that you're just trying to capitalize on the name again, like, come on now. It'd be like, in about 10 years from now, we get another Child's Play remake, all right? Like, come on now. Seriously, do we really need to have another Child's Play movie? Yeah, it just kind of feels like that type of thing. Like, we already have it.
I think the only thing where I can maybe see this working is, you know, it is directed by Blumhouse, and they've had, like, they've shown they can do some pretty good stuff. I mean, granted, they don't do a whole bunch in remakes outside of Halloween, and maybe I'm forgetting something, but I think they've shown they've got a pretty good handle on things. And B, there's probably not a whole bunch of people who have seen the 1974 version, or even like myself, 2006. So I do think on some level people will hear like, oh, okay, this is a remake, but this might be for a lot of people the first time they check it out. So I do think it could get like a little bit of a boost being around December. It'll be probably, I presume, one of the few horror movies at that time. So I could see it doing really good maybe the first week, but if it's like just terribly panned, like it's going to drop off fast. But we'll kind of see what a trailer looks like, because I mean, we'll probably be able to get a good tone and vibe for it, hopefully.
I'm waiting for right now Black Dynamite in Black Christmas. Like, it'll be started as a horror film, and then Black Dynamite shows up and starts kicking the psycho killer's ass. Yeah, I would like to see that.
All right. A little genre crossover.
Exactly. See.
Well, I was going to say, I think it, in order for it to be getting remade, it'd have to have, you know, kind of a unique twist or something to it. So, who knows, Vern, you could be right.
All right.
Let's see here. So, looks like they, Todd Phillips, he did confirm that his version of the Joker is going to be rated R. Which I don't think is overly surprising, especially based on how like dark and creepy the trailer looked so far. But I was definitely excited when I saw that, because you know I definitely want to see, you know, a really, really dark, unique twist on it. And mm-hmm. I think seeing that kind of character and really, you know, letting him off the leash essentially with, you know, no restrictions on what he can say or do. I think it could be great. Seeing Joaquin Phoenix just, you know, going full tilt. So I was pretty excited to see that. I don't know about you guys.
I'm excited. Well, I guess it kind of depends on what the action movie is, but from what I saw in the trailer, it looks really good. I'm always a little skeptical, but I've got very strong positive feelings towards this movie. And I really don't mind if it differs from the DC comic version or what people see in comics or TV shows. I think it should. I think it should be
its own movie.
Yeah, I think it needs to.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be like... I know a lot of people are trying to complain saying that, well, this Joker doesn't do this in the comics, or he didn't do this in The Dark Knight or even Batman 89. But no, it's its own separate movie. It probably is not going to follow the origin right. And the origin of the Joker has been changed and rewritten through other forms of medium, so why not? Just let's just be its own thing. The only thing that kind of, you know, makes me a little skeptical about the R rating is that I just want them to have like a good story and not just show shocking moments. All right, because some people take the R rating as an excuse to just show the most lambasted things out there, like, oh, we're gonna get crazy and he's gonna say the F word a whole bunch of times, or things are gonna get really dark and we're gonna show things that we couldn't show before in PG-13 movies. And then when you watch it, it's like, oh, well, that's all you had to show, alright? So I'm just hoping that they make good use of the R rating and make sure it doesn't seem like a PG-13 movie with like one F word, you know?
Yeah, and I don't think actually we are. I think we're going to – I like to think that it'll be a pretty measured, kind of build to more like the shocking moments. And I think we'll get a – I like to think we'll get a pretty psychological build up throughout the movie, you know, before, you know, we really kind of see while, you know, he's being driven to be a psychopath and a murderer. I think the screenplay is written by Scott Silver. I know he got an Oscar nomination for The Fighter back in 2010, so – he hasn't written a lot of movies. He's done Finest Hours. He's written 8 Mile 2. But, you know, he's got a little bit of a background. So I don't think that it's going to be just tons of, like, shock stuff. I do think there will be, you know, some legitimate build and, like, you know, some methodical progression to some of the more crazier moments.
Fair enough.
Hopefully.
Fair enough, man.
Yeah,
definitely. I like that.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, I think we're all on the same page there. And, the last piece of news I got is nothing too major, but Mark, we've been talking about the plagued filming and production of Bond 25 quite a bit recently. I think Daniel Craig is officially supposed to be returning to filming next week after his leg injury, so fingers crossed, it's all downhill from here.
Yeah, I don't have much more to add, hopefully the worst is behind him and this thing can be salvageable. I know, at least myself, my hope isn't too high right now, but maybe I'll change once, you know, we see some stills or, you know, some or 30-second, you know, spot or something. But, yeah, you know, fingers crossed everyone has a safe and, you know, harm-free filming the rest of the way.
God, no kidding, man. All right, so with that, we will go and wrap up the real news segment of this week. And we'll pause for a couple moments to hear about some friendly podcasts of thatmomentin.com.
Just to make my job as editor a lot easier, I will be presenting the little ad break promo. We'll be back, papa. We'll be back with more cinema recap. We'll be back. We'll be back after these ads.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hello, everybody. This is Jason.
And Aaron.
And we are the hosts of the For Better or Worse podcast. Like most couples, we have pretty different tastes.
There's a lot of things we agree on, of course, but it can be pretty difficult to find something to watch at the end of the day.
She likes comedies, love stories, and dramas.
And he likes anime, horror, sci-fi, and fantasy.
So we both thought it would be fun to force each other to watch our favorite movies, shows, or anything else we can think of, and record it here for you guys.
The show is a lot of fun, and it's not always torture. Sometimes we actually come around to each other's side.
We would love for you guys to give us a shot. So download For Better or Worse anywhere you listen to your favorite shows and join us in the fun.
We can't wait to share our experiences with you.
If you like intelligent and smart movie discussion,
Base is a zombie movie.
How did he write a book if he doesn't have an arm?
Or want to hear the latest news on your favorite actor?
Talk some Julianne Moore, I guess.
Whales have more films than Zoe Saldana.
Then check out The Lambcast, where no question is too risque.
Rachel, do you have a mouth?
Check out The Lambcast, the official podcast of The Lamb, the large association of movie blogs, which can be found at largeassmovieblogs.blogspot.com. Si habla español.
Hola y bienvenido a la...
All right, and welcome back to Cinema Recap. You got your hosts, John and Mark, joined by the Vern. So before we dive into the weekend recap of the box office, Vern, you got a chance to check out a kind of a unique horror comedy, would you call it?
Yeah, I guess you could call it that. That's what the trailers want you to think it is. Yeah, I saw the latest movie from Jim Jarmusch, The Dead Don't Die, starring Bill Murray, Adam Driver, Tilda Swinton, Chloe Sevigny, Danny Glover, Steve Buscemi, a whole bunch of people, and the story takes place in the small town called Centerville, and due to some global fracking, the ashes of the globe has suddenly turned and messed everything up, and it's caused the daylight to become constant throughout the day. And now zombies are coming out and eating flesh of people, and they're turning into zombies. And so the three cops, who are Bill Murray, Adam Driver, Chloe Sevigny, they team up with this mortuary worker. She's played by Tilda Swinton to try and stop the undead. As I mentioned before, the trailers really try and sell this as being a very funny, fast-paced movie. But the trailers forget to mention that this is a Jim Jarmusch movie. And a lot of his movies, he has characters talk. And they contemplate things on life. Or they talk about their place in the world. Now, I think a lot of the dry humor works, especially with Bill Murray and Adam Driver. Their conversations are like a lot of fun. But you have all these other subplots. And a lot of them, they start with something, but it never finishes. And this movie also has a lot of like meta humor where certain characters know that they are in a horror movie. Especially the beginning scene when they're driving and they play a song, which was the main credits theme song. And one of the characters asks them, like, well, hey, why are we playing the song for? And the guy goes, well, it's the theme music. And he's like, oh, okay. And they don't really bring it up again. So it's a movie that could have been really good. I think if the movie hasn't been sold as being a horror comedy, then maybe it could have been better. It was just really weird to see this movie get a wide release. And I know why it got wide release, because you got Adam Driver, who's big from the Star Wars movies, and you got Bill Murray, who is big because he's Bill Murray. But other than that, I really can't imagine this movie being played in theaters. And I saw it at my local multiplex, and the audience that went to see that movie was expecting to see something fast and funny like Shaun of the Dead or Zombieland. And it's not that movie at all. But if you are a fan of Jim Jarmusch's other films like Coffee and Cigarettes or like Patterson or he did one recently that I really liked, like Night on Earth, Only Lovers Left Alive, then you may like this one. I have sort of a hot and cold on this movie. Some movies I really like, some of them not so much. But I'm always interested to see what he does next. I think my favorite movies that he's done would probably be like Coffee and Cigarettes, Night on Earth, and Only Lovers Left Alive. But yeah, that's, if you're expecting something really fast and funny, you're not going to get that. It did make me chuckle a few times, but a lot of the funny parts that were in the trailer that was basically it for the movie. There may be one or two chuckles besides that, but if you saw the trailer, you kind of saw the best funny bit. So my review is on the site. I gave it like just 2 stars out of 5. And yeah, that's basically my out there review of The Dead Don't Die.
Huh.
Well, that's a bummer. Not exactly what I was hoping for.
Yeah.
I think I definitely wanted more of like a Shaun of the Dead type flick, and it sounds like it was quite opposite of that.
Yeah, not definitely not that. I know that Jim Jarmusch is probably trying to make sort of like a statement about how cliche horror films are, and that's why a lot of the human characters, they don't have like a lot of personality. The only character that actually did have any personality to their character is probably Tilda Swinton, as the mortuary worker who is the best at killing zombies. She's good. Carol Kane has a really short cameo in this, along with like Iggy Pop. They're like playing zombies in this. Yeah, it's just, yeah. I mean, if you happen to catch it, fine. I wouldn't really recommend it seeing in theaters unless you are a fan of the director's other features. And even then, I say just go in it very temperately, like go in there with caution, I should say.
Sure. Now, did you feel like it was like any political? Because one piece I did read, or like maybe two or three pieces, they were kind of surprised at how how much it kind of had to say. I mean, I know we got the whole fracking thing and stuff, but I kept on kind of reading a theme like people thought they didn't think it was going to be as sort of political or statement making as it was. Did you get that vibe too?
Oh, it tries to make a statement about that, about how we pollute the earth, but
yeah.
it comes at the very end of it, and it's just a narrator talked about. There's a character played by Tom Waits. He's known as Hermit Bob, and he's kind of narrating, seeing all these zombies come up on the ground. He's making a statement about how we pollute the earth, and it just seems to come out of like not sort of left field, but it's like one of those messages that someone says in a monologue, but there was like nothing in the story that had to do with that. It just seemed to be like a statement that someone was making just out of nowhere. Hey, the zombies are coming up because we polluted the earth. We are need to change as human beings. We need to learn to get along and help each other. Otherwise, we're going to become like these creatures. And there wasn't even any like social commentary. Us being zombified, because the zombies in this one, they kind of remind me of the zombies from the original Dawn of the Dead, and that they come back and they just want to do the one thing that they love. So they'll talk about guitars, driving guitars, or one zombie will be an iPhone, and that's all they say is like iPhone, iPhone, and the zombie will be like Bluetooth, Bluetooth, and the zombie's like free cable TV, and the other one's like Chardonnay. They could have made a statement about maybe how we become zombified and how we're really into is just the one thing. So like, if I was a zombie, if I came back, I would just go movies, features, laserdisc, it should have made a comment about society just being focused on one thing, and especially with people on their iPhones using social media all the time. They could have done something with that aspect of it, but it just never goes that way.
Yeah. Well, that's unfortunate, man. Very unfortunate.
Yeah, I was a little excited for that one, so it's kind of a bummer.
Life moves on. It's okay.
Yeah, it
Life
does.
Life moves on,
it
but
does.
Not for the deads in that movie, so it's all right. We'll be okay.
All right. All right, well, moving on. We'll inch a little closer to the top five. But before we do, Mark, do you want to talk a little bit about the movie that just missed breaking into the top five this weekend?
Yeah, so I was able to get to Shaft last week. I actually saw a screening of it on Monday. And for those who don't know, Shaft is actually the third time that they've made a Shaft movie in Hollywood. Started way back when in 1971 with Richard Roundtree. Then they kind of did a little bit of a remake/sequel starring Samuel L. Jackson. And now they're redoing it again, but also it's another sequel. So they've always kind of been semi-weird movies where they all carry the same name of Shaft, but technically they're sequels. But in a way, since they're releasing like 20, 30 years after the other one, they're also sequels but remakes too. So this one in particular does bring Samuel L. Jackson back as Detective John Shaft. He's the nephew of the Shaft from 1971, Richard Roundtree. This movie, we find out that he has a son, abandoned son, just known as Shaft Jr., played by Jesse Usher. And Usher himself, he's kind of become this data analyst, so he doesn't do exactly what his dad did. You know, he's kind of got a little bit of that mindset, but he goes into the FBI. He was raised differently by his mom, etc. But long story short, something happens with someone he really cared for, and he feels like it's sketchy. So, you know, he's got to find his father and really get his father's help, because his father is one of the greatest detectives ever in Samuel L. Jackson. And then that's kind of our crux of the movie. Shaft is very much a comedy, and I gotta say, I did not have a whole bunch of expectations for it, but I gotta say, it really did surprise me. I don't know if you guys saw the comedy last year starring Kyrie Irving, Uncle Drew. Are any guys familiar with that?
I'm familiar with it, but never saw that movie, Uncle Drew.
Okay, how about you, John?
I did not see it, just saw the trailers for it.
Okay, so yeah, so Shaft to me is kind of like Uncle Drew last year, where I had no real expectations. I thought Uncle Drew was going to be pretty bad. I mean, how good could a movie based off of a character, you know, selling Pepsi through skits on YouTube really be? But I was surprised that movie had some legitimate laughs. I won't say it's amazing or anything, but it's definitely a light, you know, comedic romp, especially like basketball. There's a lot of in-jokes too. I felt the same with Shaft. You know, I will say this right off the bat. If you guys are, you know, in love with Samuel Jackson, whenever he just, you know, spouts off expletives with, you know, tons of speed, you're going to like this movie off of that fact alone. I can't remember the last time Samuel Jackson has been this funny. So, you know, yeah, this movie does have that going for it. I was also surprised it's very, it's not politically correct. You know, there are some jokes that I think for sure push the line, which I'm pretty cool with. I know with some people, though, they might feel like, wow, you know, did it really need to go there? But I don't know. That kind of added to the charm for that movie for me. It's very much a plot you'll know exactly where it's going to go, I'd say, within 30, 40 minutes. It's really nothing more than, you know, corruption. And the movie even kind of spells it out for you a little bit. It's really just a matter of Can the good guys prove that the bad guys are, you know, actually behind all this? That's really what it comes down to. But if you guys are familiar with blaxploitation movies at all, I know Vern is, because he always talk about Black Dynamite, stuff like that.
Well, I'm just kind of curious, Mark. I've seen the 2000 version of Shaft,
sure.
But it, when people go on to see the new Shaft, do they need to see that other movie? Do they connect in any ways?
I don't think so, not at all. There is kind of like a montage moment right around the beginning credits that really kind of show Shaft from 1989 till present day. And it's kind of humorous a little bit. It'll kind of talk about that 2000 movie very quickly too. But no, I don't think anyone really has to see the 2000 version of this movie. And there are different movies. I actually did a post on thatmoment.com about, you know, Shaft 2000 before this one came out. And it's fine, but I think that movie had really a ton of issues for a few reasons. It was directed by John Singleton, who's a good director, but he and Samuel Jackson, if you read some of the rumors, had a lot of like clashing on set. So I don't think there was never really a consistent like wavelength or tone as to what they wanted the movie to be. Because at times it's pretty comedic, but I wouldn't say it's super funny. I wanted more action out of that movie too, and there's really not a whole bunch outside of one, you know, climactic moment in that movie. And then it really doesn't have much to say, you know, as far as like just basic, you know, race relations go. So I feel like it kind of touched on a lot of things, but it wasn't really good at any of them. This one very much focuses on being a comedy with, I'd say, a good amount of action. What kind of surprised me, though, about this movie is, again, if you have any familiarity with blaxploitation movies, you could, they're funny, but, you know, they're also kind of stereotypical, too, especially with some of the lead characters. This movie kind of does make fun of those, like, stereotypes and, like, who those characters are, really, without necessarily, you know, I guess going backwards into Shaft. It just makes, like, a general statement of how, you know, these guys can be funny, but, you know, you don't necessarily really want to be these guys. They're just uber masculine, you know, aggressive. They have some outdated ideas. And I think in a way, the blaxploitation genre, which I've kind of been exposed to, it's very outdated. It's funny, but it's very, very outdated, very stereotypical too. So I like that they kind of, you know, are a little meta with that. Directed by Tim Story, who did some of the ride-along movies and like Think Like a Man. So long story short, I was pleasantly surprised. Probably one of the more funnier movies I've laughed with this year in the cinema. Not as good as like Long Shot, but again, it's very surprising. I actually wouldn't mind owning this at some point on Blu-ray, and I would even be open to a sequel, to be honest.
Yeah, oh, wow.
I think you sold me a lot on this one there, Mark, and I'm really, really kind of more interested to check this out. I like the fact that it is a comedy. They're making references to blaxploitation films from the past and kind of making meta comments on it. So yeah, I'm very intrigued to see this. You said it was the funniest thing that Samuel Jackson has done in a while, and I always liked it when he can relax and do his funnier persona. So yeah, I will definitely check this one out.
And I love that they gave a big part in this movie to Richard Roundtree. He didn't really have a lot to do in Shaft 2000, but this movie, like, he's doing some stuff, especially in the final act, which I thought was cool.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful.
Right now, it's currently at 34% on Rotten Tomatoes, but the audience score is very high. It's at 94%, which means there is a little bit of a divide. And, you know, sometimes I frequent Reddit, and, you know, I think a lot of the comments on Reddit are saying sort of the same things I'm saying, how, you know, it's pretty funny. It's a good time. It's not amazing, but better than anyone anticipated. And there are actually some legitimate laughs. So I'd love to, you know, hear about what your guys' thoughts were, you know, especially Verdi, if you go check this out. Because I actually think it might kind of be up your alley a little bit.
Sweet. Well, it just sounds that way. From when I saw the trailers, first of all, I saw the premise of like, oh, they're going to do Shaft again? Why are you making it? And then I saw the trailers, I'm like, oh, they're going to do a comedy route of this. All right. Yeah. And it's just like Shaft's son. So you got the three generations of Shaft coming in. I'm like, all right, well, that's kind of a brilliant thing to do. So yeah, I'm all for this on the remake. I kind of wish they had a different title. My only gripe about the movie is that I wish it was called something else besides just Shaft. Because now I'm confused about what Shaft I'm talking about. The 1970 Shaft, the 2000 Shaft, or the 2018 Shaft, all right?
Yeah.
You know, like, they should call it, I don't even call it there, like,
this. Yeah, like, you get, it's weird, you know, you can't call it Shaft 2, but I don't know, and there is massive confusion, too. I guess it can kind of be just a running joke at this point, but, yeah, I was pleasantly surprised, for sure.
All right, nice.
Awesome. Well, always love to hear that and anything that Samuel L. Jackson's in. So good stuff. All right, we'll dive into the top five now.
I'm putting the burden of lousy movies back on you. It's very simple. If you stop going to bad movies, they'll stop making bad movies.
Uh-oh, the jig is up.
Number five this week, dropping all the way down from the two spot last week, is Dark Phoenix, which is just not doing very well. Kind of a sad end to the current X-Men franchise. It brought in $9.3 million. Actually moved up a spot from number five to number four this week is Rocket Man with another $9.4 million in a movie that, Vern, I think you had some thoughts on.
I did. Rocket Man. So when Bohemian Rhapsody came out, I was disappointed in that. And when I saw Bohemian Rhapsody, they always had trailers for Rocket Man. I'm like, another biopic. It's probably going to do the same cliche things that I've seen before in other biopics. And then I went and saw it, and I was very surprised by how good Rocket Man is. And I'm just trying to pull up the name of the guy who's playing Rocket Man.
Taron Egerton.
Yes, wonderful job. What I love best about this movie is how it is presented. Because this movie is presented like a musical. And in the beginning sequence, you have Elton John wearing one of his glamorous outfits. And it looks like he's going on the stage, alright? He's going to his big, huge show that they do in every biopic. They always show, like, the main character just getting prepared for his big show, and then it always goes to, like, a flashback of him as a kid. Well, for this movie, he's got his outfits on, and it looks like he's walking to stage, but no, he actually walks into a support group for alcoholics and drug addicts, and he sits down with a bunch of, like, other addicts, and he sits down, takes off his, you know, headpiece, and then he talks about his life, and you see the little boy playing himself walk into the support group, and he starts singing the song, "The Bitch Is Back," and then it cuts back to an older scene, back when he was a kid, and so each song that is presented in this biopic kind of represents how he was feeling from a kid on him being like an adult, and then his recent collaboration with Bernie Taupin, played wonderfully by Jamie Bell. But yeah, so it's each song, and it's not just using Elton John's music, it's actually the cast members singing Elton John's song. So there'll be scenes where, like, his father sings a verse of Elton John's song, or there'll be a scene in a crowd or a party, and people at the party will be singing a verse from Elton John's song. So, yeah, it's essentially a movie musical and a biopic in one. But all the songs, instead of just chronicalizing Elton John's songs of when they came out, the songs represent a feeling that happened in Elton John's past. All right. So when they play the song "Tiny Dancer," it happened at a time when, after a party, Elton John was, I guess, a little heartbroken that the love that he liked went on with someone else, or something of that aspect right there. So that's the best way I can describe it, is that each song represents a feeling that happened, or a mode, or something that was happening in Elton John's past, and it's really cool. It's really stylized very well. Yeah, I heavily enjoyed it. It's something that I will definitely check out again. I think the director of this, Dexter Fletcher, actually, I think he did do some work on Bohemian Rhapsody, if I imagine right. The last movie he actually did was Eddie the Eagle,
okay,
which I have not seen. But yeah, so I was very, very kind of surprised, because what I was expecting was just your standard run-of-the-mill biopic. But then seeing that it was a full-fledged musical, like somebody in the style of La La Land, I actually really got on board with it, because it was a new take on doing the standard typical biopic.
And Edgerton did also all of his own singing for it, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Yes. Wow. And he's great.
That, I mean, that's impressive. To do your own singing in a movie is one thing, but to have to replicate, you know, Elton John, no less, I mean, that's a task in and of itself. So, and it's getting rave reviews. You know, it's making some pretty solid noise at the box office. Vern, I'm guessing this is one we're going to see come award season.
I imagine so. I imagine at least, you know, awards for, you know, of course, Tehran. I can imagine some awards for the cinematography, maybe some of the directing and writing. Who knows? Who knows? But maybe the Academy's like, well, you know, we already gave, you know, the awards to one biopic before. Do we really need to give it to another one? So who knows? Because the Academy Awards have always been, like, somewhat political, I guess. So who knows? Yeah.
We'll see. That's a good point, though. It could be bad timing. They might not want to do, you know, two musical biopics back to back. But hey, if it lives up to the hype, then, you know, it certainly deserves to have its name called at award season.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Mark, did you have any thoughts on Rocketman?
I don't, because I unfortunately have not gotten to it yet. But I've heard a lot of the same things, especially if, like, this movie was released a little later. And maybe it might get a little more awards vibes. I guess the one things some interesting things I've had heard is some people think it's a lot more of a musical than they were led on to be. But I think you kind of hit on it a little bit, Vern. While, you know, it's not, like, at least in your opinion, the traditional biopic, which can be interesting in a sense for sure. But no, you know, I think I'm gonna catch it at some point just because I do like Taron Egerton, and I think he did some of his singing before in another animated movie, so I think he's got, like, the pipes and the chops to do that. But by all accounts and purposes, I mean, it's his best performance of his young career. So yeah, I think I'm about to, you know, search this out. I'm not a huge Elton John fan by stretch of imagination, but you know, I like a good movie from good performance.
And that's the thing too, you don't really have to like a lot of Elton John songs. I only know a few Elton John songs, but when you listen to the songs presented in the movie, like, oh shoot, that's right, I do remember this track. And sometimes they play a track like, oh my gosh, I totally forgot that he did this track. And so, yeah, and I just like the way that they framed the musical sequences into the movie itself there. Yeah, it was actually really well done, the way that they used his music. And it ends on such, like, a really high note. It's a very positive feeling movie, and it makes you feel really good. I mean, the man has actually accomplished a lot, and it does go through some of the tropes you see in other biopic movies where there's a problem with drugs and alcohol, such and but even that moment, it feels earned. It feels earned, and the resolution of that whole session is also earned as well, too. So, yeah, I really hate to have nothing but high praise for the acting directing. It doesn't seem like a long movie. It breezes by pretty fast. And everyone in my theater was just enjoying themselves, you know, like, just getting all caught up with the whole aspect of the whole thing. It was really cool.
Right.
Awesome. Yeah, it sounds like it's been one of the bigger hits of 2019 so far. All right, and just rounding out the top five, we've got Aladdin, which stayed stagnant in the number three spot with $17.3 million. Worldwide, it's up to $727 million, so it's been crushing it. The Secret Life of Pets 2 dropped one spot to the number two spot with $24.4 million. And then we've got the newcomer Men in Black International, which brought in what I gather is a pretty disappointing $30 million domestically. Looks like it's a $110 million budget, and it looks like worldwide it's done about $103 million so far. But yeah, I read pretty average reviews, and I definitely don't think it put up the numbers that it was hoping to. So I don't know if you guys had any further thoughts on Men in Black International.
I really don't. I do like the fact that Chris Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson are together in this from their work on Thor Ragnarok. And based on that, that makes me want to at least rent the movie. I may still go see it in theaters because I've got the AMC stubs and they give you three movies to watch a week, so I may check this out down the road, just something to watch, but I really have low expectations of this. Mainly, I like F. Gary Gray as a director, but the last time he directed a remake of a Barry Levinson. Well, he did that remake of Get Shorty. Cool.
Oh God, yeah, that was terrible.
Okay, so yeah, so he did a remake of that. And why can I not remember that director's name? This is gonna bother me like in no way, shape, or form. But yeah, oh God, I just had it on here, and Barry Sonnenfeld. Barry Sonnenfeld did, yeah. So that, and Barry Sonnenfeld also directed the first Men in Black. I think he might have done the second one as well too. So you got a new director coming in, and plus, I don't know. I'm sure Hemsworth and Thompson are great, but they're not Tommy Lee Jones or Will Smith, all right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was really hoping that that F. Gary Gray, you know, had another hit, because, you know, he did a lot of Law-Abiding Citizen, took some time off, did Straight Outta Compton, which I thought was amazing.
It was great, yeah.
Yeah, and then Fate of the Furious, I didn't love. And then, you know, unfortunately, now it looks like Men in Black was kind of another dud.
Right.
So, yeah, unfortunately. But, yeah, I think this was actually the slowest weekend of the box office this year so far. Or, I don't know. I read something that it was not a great weekend altogether. But
yeah, Shaft underperformed, and so did, you know, obviously X-Men Dark Phoenix, and now, you know, Men in Black International. You know, really, the only thing that's keeping this afloat is the Avengers, and I think Aladdin's had a pretty good performance.
Coming soon to theaters.
I guess now we might as well just transition to next week, and I think the movie that's going to save a lot of receipts is going to be Toy Story, because I think it's just, you know, killing the reviews right now, and it's an animated movie, so you know it's going to get families in the seats, etc.
Yeah, it's just a surefire franchise. You know, it dates back to the 90s, so I think there's a certain nostalgia factor, you know, for people our age, and then obviously all the younger kids want to see it. So, I mean, it's going to absolutely make a slaughtering, especially with nothing else that can even contest against it.
Right.
No, not even close. I think the only movie that would be made in the top five at all that week would probably be the remake of Child's Play. Maybe in the top five, but very
tiny. I think it'll be in the top five. Yeah, I think it'll be in the top five. I could see it maybe.
I think Child's Play will be number two, maybe.
I could see it being number two, or, you know, I almost say definitely number three. I could see it getting to number two, though, for sure.
Yeah, I figure Men in Black will probably drop off, maybe, you know, probably sub 20 million. So then you look at, you know, a horror movie putting up, you know, 25, 30 million. I could see that.
Yeah. No, Vern, because, you know, we haven't had you on in a little while. What are your thoughts on the design of this new Chucky?
It's fine, I guess. The only reason why a lot of people are going to see this flick is to hear Mark Hamill as Chucky. That's really kind of the one selling point of this movie. I really can't say anything else good about it. I mean, the cast looks fine, you know, it looks okay, but it's just another remake. I was not even going to have any interest in this movie until Mark Hamill was cast as the voice of this. And that's like my only interest of watching this is him. That's really it, because it's going to be the same story. I like the fact, well, I guess, you know, Chucky is no longer a killer doll. It's like this AI unit that you can hook up to a smartphone to make it legitimate to the 2018 crowd.
Sure.
I don't know. I don't know. It could be fine, but then again, you're just comparing things to other movies, and I'm just kind of, it's like, it doesn't really need to have a review if you're just comparing it to another feature, because you have to compare it to the original. Maybe you don't, but a lot of people will. It's really hard for me to give my thoughts about remakes, because I'm from an older generation, and I remember watching the first one, so of course I want to make comparisons to that, and it's really difficult to watch a movie and not compare them. And I know I should just take movies as they are, because movies are going to get remade. I mean, come on, the original Child's Play came out in 1988, which is super old to a lot of people, and I understand that, because hell, I'm in my 40s right now, and I still think of Child's Play as being a relevant movie, and I know that's not the case. So, yeah, I mean, I'm curious if they do a lot if they do a lot of different things with it, then I can be more into it. But yeah, damn, I rant a lot on that. I apologize.
All good. Chucky like scared the hell out of me when I was a kid, and just like the look of the doll. And when I saw what the new one looked like, it just I feel like it's kind of a miss so far. Mark, what are your initial thoughts on the new Chucky?
The more I look at it, I have seen the trailer a few times. The more I look at it, I don't think I'm necessarily in love with how the doll looks and stuff. I don't know. It's like kind of. It's hard to say. I can't really put a word to it, but it's just something looks very, very off, but not like in a creepy way. It just like looks very off and kind of like a pathetic way. So
looks like too animated almost.
Yeah, that's probably the best word, the right word for sure. I do like Brian Tyree Henry. He's in the movie, especially over the last year or two. He's proved himself to be quite the actor. He was in Beale Street Could Talk, Widows, did Spider-Man. Dude is very, very talented. It has our girl on it, Aubrey Plaza. What's her name? Vern. We had a pretty good pod a couple weeks ago about Ingrid Goes West. I think it's her best.
Oh, wait. Keep talking. I totally forgot that Aubrey Plaza was in Child's Play because they don't really. In the trailers, they don't really, focus on her that much, and I completely forgot she's in that. But yes, you are right.
I think Ingrid Goes West is like her best work of her career so far. This movie, I don't know. It feels like it's very, very kind of phoned in. It's probably just because she doesn't have much to do outside of saying, Chucky can't talk, Andy, he's not real. It seems like that's really all she's really got to do, so I'm not expecting a whole bunch from her, but she's in it, so...
Mark, it's a paycheck movie. All actors have to do a paycheck movie here and there, because it's a big franchise. She knows she's going to make some money, she's going to make her funds back, and she'll be able to do another good performance piece somewhere down the line, alright? Maybe she'll return an Ingrid Goes West 2 movie or something like that. Who knows?
I would say what is kind of compelling to me about this movie, it's not anything that the movie is going to be about. It's just, it's 90 minutes. Sometimes I'm all for, 2.5-3 hour movie. Sometimes I want to go to the theater, pop in, pop out, and like, cool, all right, that was done.
Yeah. Yeah, good point.
So, Mark, are you going to be seeing this one this weekend?
I haven't committed to it. I'm kind of on the fence. If no one else is like all that way in, then maybe I'll go and watch it on like Saturday morning and have my thoughts by like Sunday night, Monday or something, enough to where I could talk about it on a podcast. So if no one else is gonna step to the plate, I will go and I'll check this movie out. It's not getting screened, so I will go to the theater and probably check it out on the weekend if I've got nothing else to do.
Okay, yeah, I think I might try to catch it this weekend, so we'll be able to chat about it.
All right. We will talk about it after the pod as to maybe who wants to cover it, if we're both going to do it, who wants to go ahead and get the thoughts on paper. But, yeah, okay, maybe we can both check it out and have a little bit to play off of each other.
Yeah, sounds good. I think that's about it then, guys.
There's only one other movie that comes out is Anna.
That's right.
Is that the Luc Besson movie?
Yes.
I didn't know he was doing it. He's producing it, right? He's not directing it.
No, he's directing it, too. He's writing and directing it.
Oh, really?
Wow. Huh. Yeah. I thought he was just writing it. Okay, never mind.
So, I don't know. I mean, I've seen trailers for this, and seeing the name Anna, it just reminds me of the movie Hannah, but just like the R-rated version of that. And instead of having to be like a young kid who's around 12 or 13, now you got this older, glamorous model just fighting, kicking ass. We've seen this before with Atomic Blonde. The beautiful woman that can also fight people well. I know there'll be like a lot of doubt of this. I know it'll probably look cool. Like the gunplay will be fine. It's 2 hours long, which is gonna really bother me.
Yeah, just off the top of my head, I'm looking at the runtime. I obviously haven't seen the movie or anything, but I feel like, 140 is probably like a pretty good, runtime for these type of movies. I mean, even I think the first John Wick, I think it's like an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah.
The other ones gotten a little longer, around 2 hours, but I feel like they kind of have a reason to be because they have a lot more lore. be interested to see if, you know, if there's any fat with this 1 hour 59 movie for Anna.
And I'm all for, like, female assassin movies and female fighting movies. This could be good, but come on now. I think the, for me, the best female assassin movie had to be, like, the Kill Bill movies. That, for me, was, like, probably, like, the best ones. This was got definitely more gunplay. It kind of reminds me, as I mentioned before, Atomic Blonde. It kind of reminds me of La Femme Nikita, in a way. And I, for me, this could have been a sequel to The Professional Leon with the Natalie Portman character growing up, and she becomes an assassin because she was learning to do that. I would like it if that was the case here. They could have easily gotten Natalie Portman to reprise the role. But this just looks like a very kind of standard, like a basic Cable type of feature. But I don't know. I have not even seen his last feature, the the Valerium.
Okay. Oh yeah, I've seen Valerium. Yeah, I mean it was a pretty good looking movie. But I remember that movie mainly for Dane DeHaan, who I generally like as an actor, but I think he was extremely overcast in that movie, you know, or miscast in that movie as like a hero. Every time I see Dane DeHaan, I mean, he's right in his wheelhouse as kind of like these, you know, quirky, kind of oddball, some of our dark characters. In this movie, he's very much like a hero, and he just doesn't have that hero type of vibe to me. So that was part of the reason why I just didn't really care much for that movie. And it was also pretty long too. I think it was like 2 hours and 30 minutes, Valerian. But I remember that movie heavily from a couple summers ago, and it's not because I loved it a lot, it's just it was kind of a slog a little bit.
I would say though that he has reteamed with his original cinematographer of like The Fifth Element, mm-hmm. and Leon the Professional and Liv and Nikita, so that's at least gonna look really good. So I'm very excited about that. And I wanna see, and the music is also done by his longtime composer Eric Serra, who also composed La Femme Nikita, The Fifth Element, Leon the Professional, and so forth. So it looks like that Luc Besson is going back to his roots with Anna. So that makes me a little bit more intrigued to watch this, because he's got the original cinematographer, he's got his original composer. Based on that element, it makes me more interested to check it out.
Yeah, are you going to be covering this maybe, potentially?
I will cover this one. I'm also moving this weekend too, and there's other events going on. But yes, I will cover this on the site of That Moment In at least before the end of this weekend. All right, so check out reviews. Hopefully by Sunday, Saturday or Sunday.
Okay. Yeah, I actually forgot it was coming out this weekend, to be honest.
All right, good deal. Well, so Vern, we can expect the Anna review from you this week. Anything else that you'll be putting on That Moment In?
Actually, no, because I move into my new place next Tuesday. So I'm doing like a lot of packing this weekend. But I will try at least watch Anna and have a review posted for at least that movie for sure on That Moment In. But really, that's about it. I kind of took a hiatus from Cinema Recall until after I moved. So I apologize there hasn't been any new episodes of Cinema Recall. But I'll get back into the swing of things after I finally move into my place.
Cool. Yeah, makes sense. Mark, what can we expect from yourself this week?
Honestly, it might be a little bit of a lean week for yours truly, guys. At least maybe until the weekend, where I almost certainly will check out something. But I actually have nothing down the pipe right now. No real screenings to get to. So I was supposed to get to Toy Story 4. But I do have some stuff going on tomorrow that's going to make it impossible. And I think we might have that covered already by Steven. So that will be up at some point, but not from me. Probably from someone else on the site. But yeah, if I could maybe get to like a what to watch, or maybe something that goes in a deeper catalog of things I want to get to, and I have inspiration to write about it, I will get to it.
All right, sounds good. And then we'll, in the meantime, we'll figure out the Child's Play review. But I think that'll do it for this week of Cinema Recap. Just appreciate everybody joining in, and Vern, it's great to have you.
Hey, thank you guys for having me on. I love just kind of stopping in here to see how your cats are doing and You're looking well. John, you may want to shave a little bit. That's all right. You know, good. Yeah, but Mark, I like the shirt you have on there, buddy. You're looking very suave. Yes.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Oh, good stuff. All right, guys. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Cinema Recap is a proud member of That Moment In Podcast Network. Find all your favorite shows over on the site thatmomentin.com. We are available on iTunes, Spotify, Player FM, Radio Public, Stitcher, Podomatic, everywhere. Just search That Moment In. Thank you all for listening.